from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Montgomery, filling in for Michael Krasny. Iraqi and Kurdish forces, backed by a U.S.-led coalition, have launched an offensive to take back the city of Mosul from ISIS, who have held it since 2014. Could this be a turning point in the fight against ISIS in the region, or will the group simply regroup in other parts of Iraq and maintain its stronghold in Syria? We'll get the latest in our opening hour. Then at 9:30, we'll look back at the life and legacy of activist and lawmaker Tom Hayden, who died last night at age 76. That's next after this. From KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Montgomery in for Michael Krasny. Well, an alliance of Iraqi and Kurdish armies backed by the United States Special Forces is pushing to retake the city of Mosul from the so-called Islamic State. And this is the city where 2 years ago the group declared an Islamic caliphate encompassing Iraq and Syria. But over the past year, ISIS has been steadily losing territory both in Syria and in Iraq. What will happen if the group is forced to give up Mosul? And what about the civilians trapped in the city, more than a million in total? The UN has already warned of an impending humanitarian catastrophe should the battle endure for months. Well, joining us to talk about all this in terms of the situation in Iraq and Syria is Ben Watson. He's the news editor with Defense One. That's a website covering the military and national security. Ben Watson, good morning and welcome to Forum.
Hey, great to be here, Michael.
Well, thanks for joining us. I want to ask you about the situation in Mosul. There had been some speculation that ISIS might not even try to defend the city, given the army that it's facing, or multiple armies, if you will. But clearly, that's not what we're seeing. Give us an update on the situation as it stands today.
Well, they've made some the security forces, the joint security forces between Kurdish fighters to the north and Iraqi security forces more to the south. They made some pretty incredible gains over the past 6 days alone. They had started out somewhere between 20, 25 kilometers away from the city center of Mosul about a week ago. And this morning they've gotten to within about 5 miles of Mosul now. That's a pretty incredible pace that it's moving. You know, they've been saying for days now that things are moving more quickly than they had anticipated. But now you can expect a lot of peripheral advances before you get, of course, closer to the sort of hornet's nest of Mosul proper.
And that's in some of the villages surrounding the city, correct?
That's correct, yeah. As of this morning, the Iraqi security forces claim to have taken back about 80 villages, ISIS-held villages, in the vicinity.
Okay, set us up geographically. Where are we in Iraq right now when we're talking about Mosul? And talk about this coalition, if you will, in terms of numbers and what we think in terms of the number of ISIS fighters who are in Mosul, who are defending Mosul.
Well, so geographically, Mosul is a northern city in Iraq. It's on the Tigris River. It's split on across the Tigris River, and we've got Erbil, which is the Kurdish capital, over to the east quite a bit, and Baghdad is down considerably to the southeast. And a lot of those forces are closing in. They had come in about from three different directions. Many of them accompanied by Western U.S.-led coalition advisors. There's about 100 to 200. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
There's about 100 to 200 American advisors on the ground, closer to the fronts and on the periphery. And there's some French, some Canadian, and some British advisors as well, all pushing in to a force that's totaling probably the most consistent number for the total force strength that I've seen is going to clock in at about 30,000 versus the number of ISIS fighters in Mosul, which is estimated to be anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000 fighters.
And, of course, Mosul is important not just strategically but symbolically, if you will. This is the place where the ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared a caliphate 2 years ago. It's also my understanding this is the biggest city that ISIS holds both in Iraq and Syria.
Without a doubt, yes. I mean, the next one is going to be Raqqa, Syria, which has often been called their de facto headquarters. The number of civilians believed to be in Raqqa is about 250,000, whereas Mosul has as many as 1.2 million. So you can obviously see that this is kind of like the biggest show of the war against ISIS, and the next is going to be, the next one's assuming Mosul moves at a similar pace, or at least with the same momentum we kind of have so far. Yeah, Raqqa will be an entirely different kind of fight.
Right. And as we mentioned at the top, this follows a string of defeats for ISIS, both in Iraq and Syria, losing important strategic places, for example, on the border with Turkey. So I want to get back to this coalition. We've got the army of Kurdistan, the Peshmerga. We also have the Iraqi army. But within that, we have coalitions. I mean, we have Shiite militias, if you will, operating, what, under the banner of the Iraqi army? How is that playing out?
They are, yeah, I mean, effectively, they're tied into Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi's kind of coalition of troops here. Now, these militias are not supposed to enter the city, Mosul being a predominantly Sunni Islamic city for many years. And so Shia, you know, the history of sectarian tensions with Sunnis, these Shia are supposed to stay on the edge. The messaging that I've seen so far from these paramilitary forces is that that's what they will do. And there's I think there's a group that's over towards the northwest that's kind of adding a little bit of pressure on that quadrant. So you kind of have four total quadrants, and there's kind of one that's allowed as somewhat of a release valve for safe routes out of Mosul. The rest are being pressured by, you know, these paramilitary forces to the west and a little bit to the south. And, of course, Baghdad's forces coming up from the south, southeast. And then you have, the Kurdish forces advancing west from Erbil.
And we're talking with Ben Watson, news editor with Defense One. That's a website covering the military and national security. What questions do you have about ISIS and the fight for Mosul? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Well, I want to get back to you about the U.S. forces. We are told that there are no ground troops in Iraq, but of course there are, in my understanding, several thousand special forces in the region. Talk to me again about where they are in terms of what we know and what their role is in this attack on Mosul.
Well, the photos and the reports that I've seen that pertain to the American presence, they largely zero in on advisors that have been linked up with Peshmerga fighters that, like I said, are coming from Erbil and advancing west. You've got a variety, not just special operations forces like Navy SEALs and Green Berets, but you've also got the non-special forces soldiers that are, because of the way that we've learned how to do combat with IEDs, that are attached to these folks. And that's the one American who has died so far. He was a bomb disposal expert attached to a SEAL unit.
And he died over the weekend or just a few days ago.
It was late last week, yes, right. Indeed.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, please.
They're just more Peshmerga than Iraqi forces, but they are still advising with the Iraqi forces that are kind of a little bit more to the south, southeast.
And just a reminder, I mean, the United States occupied Mosul back so long ago at the beginning of the Iraq War, 2003. I want to ask you again also about the humanitarian situation. There are a lot of people in Mosul, whether they're captives or not, they're certainly not able to leave at this point. What are the plans or what is the thinking on the humanitarian side? Are we going to see a situation like Aleppo where, you know, thousands of civilians could be killed in the fighting? What are you hearing from, say, the UN and other aid agencies?
Well, so in short, we're all hearing that the worst is yet to come. And that's what our executive editor, Kevin Barron, had reported traveling with Defense Secretary Ash Carter to Iraq this past weekend. And he went to Erbil and he went to Baghdad. Excuse me. And, we're doing this kind of trimming and chipping away at the edges of Mosul. And then once the coalition gets closer and closer and it's going to be house-to-house urban fighting inside Mosul, it's going to be difficult. I don't think it's going to have quite the gruesome brutality that we've witnessed from Aleppo in the past recent weeks and months, but it will be pretty. It's not going to be very pretty. Right now, there have only been about 5,000.
War is never pretty, I'm afraid. But this could be, given the number of people in the city and, you know, the different forces arrayed here, I mean, it could be really nasty, I mean, in terms of civilian casualties.
Without a doubt. I mean, you know, there were reports over the weekend that ISIS had executed like 280 civilians after reports just a day prior that they were grabbing hundreds of civilians to use as human shields for just this very purpose that you and I are talking about. So that's what everybody has to expect. I mean, they've got all these tunnels that have been dug around beneath Mosul as well and around the villages, and they could be putting hostages down in the tunnels. There's any number of things that they could be doing, and you have to assume the worst. Otherwise, you're going to get blindsided. So there's already been a lot of gruesome brutality from some of these tunnels that have gone, and, you know, once the coalition troops will advance, you know, maybe a fighter will pop out and get a couple shots off at some of these troops. So that's just a sense of the outside. And then once you get the inside of the city, I would expect probably a lot more of that. So it's going to be pretty hairy, no doubt.
And this is even more complex because there's other players here. We have Turkey, who has big interests in the region in terms of the Kurds. And also Russia, which is aligned with Syria. And that leads us, I want to take a call from Philip in Burlingame, has a question just along those lines. Philip, you're on forum.
Hi. So, you know, everyone's talking about ISIS, but really ISIS and ISIL have been kind of a side game. The lead game has been what's going on in Syria, you know, with the Russians. And what I called about were especially the Turks. So the Turks will, you know, break out of the EU and NATO over the Kurdish issue. You know, they'll never allow Kurdistan to be established. And they've been holding the Peshmerga back in their attacks against ISIL. You know, how has that changed?
Okay, thanks for your comment, or your question, rather. Well, let's go to that question. I mean, the Turks have been very active in Syria, trying to push back Kurdish forces there. Also, perhaps waiting in the wings in the region, not that far from Mosul. Ben Watson, what's your thoughts on Turkey's role or potential role?
Well, Turkey has definitely taken a kind of a spotlight role. Well, they're really trying to anyway. In recent days, about a year ago, things were considerably different. Whenever Turkish air forces had shot down the Russian jet that had allegedly violated Turkish airspace, that was that set off a spiral in Turkish and Russian relations. And about it was a couple weeks ago, things went about 180 between Turkey and Russia. So things there was a pipeline deal announced between Russia and Turkey that brought the two nations close together suddenly diplomatically, and that of course complicates so many efforts in Syria because of Turkey's proximity to the fight. And yes, as the caller mentioned, these Kurds. Turkey is a particularly complicating factor here. They, in recent days, especially since the Mosul offensive started, have been trying to elbow their way into the fight, and they've been rejected and declined and denied on numerous occasions by Iraq's prime minister. Just over the weekend, the U.S. tried to pressure the prime minister to accept Turkish troops for the Mosul offensive, and the prime minister declined again. And then yesterday, the Turks, they've been putting out some odd messaging. Their foreign minister said that they've got jets on standby and they've already conducted artillery strikes to help the Mosul offensive. Well, the Iraq coalition itself denied those claims. And sometimes you have to wonder if Turkey's just trying to see if they can do whatever they can to elbow their way in and be important or be relevant to this fight. It's been really, they have a mixed history, as do so many actors in this conflict.
Right, and of course we've got Russia as well. I want to get to that, but I first want to take a call from Carrie in Palo Alto. Hi, Carrie, you're on forum.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
I'm great.
Thanks so much for covering this. Good morning. I've been wondering, we've been hearing in the presidential debates this line about advance notice for attacks, and I'm kind of wondering if that has a legitimate humanitarian purpose or what the security implications of that are.
Okay, so you're referring to, I believe, comments from Donald Trump, who was suggesting that the talk about an attack on Mosul was giving ISIS leaders a kind of a heads up and allowing them to sneak out of the city and go somewhere else. We know that there was pushback on that. But Ben Watson, what are your thoughts on that in terms of, I think what the caller is talking about is the idea of giving civilians notice so that they might be able to get out of the city, although I don't think we've seen that so far.
Sure. Well, this is a tried and true sort of method for cities that are under siege. This method of saying something's going to happen soon, dropping leaflets saying specifically what's going to happen, and then giving safe routes, recommended safe routes. The point overall with this, I mean, keep in mind as well, when we're talking about advance notice, the U.S. 19 months ago said that the Mosul offensive was, quote, only weeks away. What that does from an intelligence perspective is you've already got surveillance assets in the air watching a city. If you suddenly tell the city and the inhabitants and the ISIS leaders, of course, by extension, that something is going to happen, you can watch how they react. And now, look, it's taken 19 months as we learned how they reacted to that message off and on. And, of course, we've been teasing this Mosul offensive even more this year, you know, since like February, March, a little bit off and on. It allows you to gain intelligence on where folks are going, how they respond, what they're doing in reaction to this message, you know. And of course, it does let civilians know that there are developing opportunities for them to be housed for the displaced people. You know, that number, worst case scenario, as many as 1 million, according to the UN. So there are advantages to sort of this quote advance notice situation.
Right, but
do we have any idea
whether ISIS leaders are still in Mosul, given the importance of that city for the so-called Islamic State?
So for a fact, the answer is no. We don't know for sure. U.S. officials have said that ISIS leaders have been the senior leaders have been leaving the city over the past 4 or 5 days. We reporters were not given any proof of that or any names of any senior leaders. Only simply that line. So even if it is just kind of a messaging tactic against ISIS, saying, you know, hey, your fighters are leaving, you should too, throw down your weapons, et cetera. The fact of the matter is we just don't know for sure that that's happening.
Okay.
It's a difficult situation, but it is advantageous to spread that message.
Let's take another call. I want to go to Mary in Scotts Valley. She has a question about the religious significance of Mosul. Mary, you're on forum.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm an ordained minister in the Episcopal Church. And I've studied the city of Mosul from the book of Jonah in the Old Testament. So it's a Judeo-Christian, and then eventually I believe it's also an Islamic city of importance. And it is the city of Nineveh. And when Jonah, it's a small book, read it someday, 4 chapters. When Jonah is asked to go and warn the king of Nineveh to stop his evil ways against his citizens, Jonah can't stand it. He does everything he can to try to not go there. But God is calling him to go and negotiate and try. And now in 2002, some of us, Jim Wallace, Sojourners, some writers, Steve Walt from Harvard School of Government, and others were writing for ways in which the United States could affect positive change through negotiation and nonviolent ways of stopping. Back when Saddam Hussein was there, we failed in that, and the Republican Party went ahead and took us down the path we went. Is there any effort being done now to work seriously on a religious level, since you're dealing with, I realize, fundamentalist Islamic behavior? It's so radical that it might be hard to do, but can you tell me if any anthropologists or religionists or people who understand that history and understand the power play that some people believe is for the sake of God. What efforts might also be going on
okay.
in that regard?
Okay, Mary, thanks for your question. This getting outside of the military sphere, Ben Watson, any thoughts on this? I mean, Mosul is clearly important in the religious sphere, but it seems like right now it is all about a military battle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been inundating myself with Mosul news as much and from as many different angles as I can over the past 7 to 8, 9 days. And I haven't really seen anything that speaks to our caller's point here, aside from what I had previously mentioned, where Shia militias have been asked and said that they would stay on the outskirts of Mosul, where the Sunni fighters, Iraqi fighters, would be the ones that are pushing in with the counterterrorism police, really the tip of the spear for the best of the best for Iraq's troops. Now, of course, as you sort of alluded to, Michael, what we've got here is an enormously complicated and compromising situation that they have to kind of get a better control of before that we can really kind of throw in these anthropologists to get some insight for how to govern from here forward.
Well,
right
that,
now
that,
you're basically
right.
Yeah, you're trying to gird for the Sunni sectarian.
Well, and that gets to some trouble. Questions, other comments and questions. Ben asks, if the even if the Iraqis take over Mosul, won't it be difficult for them to hold it? And that gets to your point about governing. There's been lots of writing and lots of speculation about what will happen if ISIS is forced out of Mosul. There's been talks about a sectarian bloodbath. There's been questions about whether the Iraqi government is capable of governing Mosul. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I know that they seem to be putting the message out that they have learned the lesson of sectarianism that helped give rise to ISIS. You know, the Shia-led government.
The idea that Prime Minister al-Maliki, the former prime minister,
absolutely.
Really, you know, pushed Momentum. Sunnis yeah. aside, and it created a vacuum in the Sunni world in which ISIS sort of thrived. And so I guess the question is how to prevent that, this kind of vacuum developing in Mosul in that area.
Well, you're probably going to do it from a very basic and fundamental kind of, you know, set of mandates. And mostly it's keep the Shia out as much as possible and let's get some Sunnis in. And then from there, you can kind of draw up a more complicated plan. I haven't seen anything more complicated than that at this point.
So another listener comments, the only solution to the whole mess in Iraq and Syria is for the U.S. to take its hands totally out of the Mideast and leave. That's clearly not the plans of the Obama administration. But what are the chances that we'll see more troops or special forces drawn into the region? Perhaps if ISIS is driven out of Mosul and moving, you know, retreating towards Syria or into the desert, could we see expanded U.S. operations?
I think it's possible that as this Mosul offensive matures, and we've got officials saying, you know, at least 2 months or so before we can kind of begin to think about something that would resemble victory in this kind of particular push. Short of that, I don't see a whole lot of ways that this is going to kind of pan out, anytime soon at all.
Right. And briefly, there's been speculation that what ISIS is perhaps even saying it's going to do is sort of melt into the desert, put the caliphate on hold, perhaps not formally, but that they will just sort of move back into the desert and regroup in that way. Is that a possibility?
That's a realistic possibility. Their own messaging has kind of shifted. You know, they said that they would have the apocalyptic end of the world at this fight in a particular town in northwestern Syria. Well, the Turkish-backed rebels and the Turkish military took that town, and you and I are still talking. And so their messaging pushed out to tell their fighters that still were alive in Iraq and Syria that the, you know, the apocalypse will be postponed for a later date.
The apocalypse will be postponed. But meanwhile, the battle...
That's not a direct quote, but
right.
That's obviously the paraphrased message there.
Right, right. But meanwhile, the battle for Mosul may continue for many months.
Indeed. I think that's a safe estimate.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Ben Watson, for sharing your expertise on the battle for Mosul. Again, we've been talking with Ben Watson, news editor with Defense One. That's a website covering the military and national security. Again, Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Michael. It was great.
All right. You're listening to Forum. Stay with us. More to come. Thanks.